Listen, I don't want to big myself up, but I feel like when I started my career, I maybe started in the wrong era because I'm very 2026.
Yeah.
But back then it was your hobbies had to be like golf and me taking photos, like that was a big thing. Like, when I left, that was like one of the reasons why I ended up leaving as well. Like myself and Ashwell, who was obviously coach, Ashwell Prince, we had a big falling out because like my off-field activities didn't align.
Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brooke.
I thought I was surprised that you were in town. I thought you'd actually be at the MLC or...
Well, so I came back from Belgium, obviously.
Yeah.
My agent called me about, because what's happening now is some of the contracted guys have to come back for the awards. So it's like, crazy, I think there's two games or something like that. But then it's like, if that team is not going to qualify, then it's pointless going, you know. So it's like, just hang tight a little bit. So it's fine. If it comes.
How was
up
that Belgium one? Was it like weird?
It was. The only thing was, the weather was cuck.
What?
It rained.
Yeah.
So apparently the week before it was like...
It was
hot, right? We were there for 2 weeks? I think out of the 2 weeks, maybe 10, 11 days rain. So Ghent, we ended up winning it. They had like pretty much all of their games rained off. They played against us. We had a full game. We beat them in a super over.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended up beating the best team in the final, was Antwerp.
Yeah.
And they ended up winning it. But like, it was, I think the scheduling wasn't right. So it was five teams.
Mm.
You play your like group stage. But then like on the fifth day, so the last round of, group games, there's another game, 4 and 5 playoff to see now who goes into the top four. To go into the next round where you play everyone again and then the top two teams go to the final. So like
dog show.
We were actually lucky lucky and unlucky. So on that day we had a bye.
Mm.
But if we had finished fourth or fifth, we would have to play. So we were second going into that day. But then if like the one team beat the other team, then they could go second and we'd be third. And then if this team in the second game beat the other team, then they would go third and we'd be fourth. So then we would have to play. So like we had planned this off day, like, oh, we're going to go to Amsterdam for the day. Like, you know, we're going to wake up super early, go. And then they're like, listen, like this could happen and that could happen. Like, so just hang tight. So our off day basically got like spoiled.
Are you involved at all in this new European?
No, not yet. Yeah, we'll see if anything pops on.
I like that idea. Concept, it's different to
a nice concept
to any of the other leagues as well. And I think it's in a region that could do with that upliftment.
Yeah,
and it's actually got a certain. It's got a reason. It's not just TV money. It's actually got a reason to improve the cricket in that region.
So I was actually speaking to Faf there because obviously he's one of the Rotterdam or something.
The Dockers.
So I asked him, obviously they're still kind of setting everything up, right?
Yeah.
So I was asking him maybe if like, because obviously you've got Netherlands, you've got Ireland, Scotland. And Scotland.
Yeah.
And then like, why not get like the winner of Belgium like somehow in there? Because I think they've only got, how many teams? Like five teams, I think, or so.
It's a small
one. So then you can add one team, you have six teams. And then it's another like European country as well.
Yeah.
So something like that could maybe be...
I think I'm looking forward to seeing how it's going to roll out, and I love the idea that like
I think it's cool,
like Faf and John D and them are like owners, kind of also going to play. I mean, Faf will play, and Heinrich will play.
Yeah, I think it's a like cool concept. The only thing is like you almost, I mean, first year is always, you never know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Like, is it going to tank? Is it going to be a hit?
Yeah.
And even if it does do well, how well is it going to do?
Yeah.
And like, you always want your local market buying into it. I mean, that's why SA20 has been so successful.
Yeah.
Even from the first season. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think like, obviously you would know the numbers and stuff like that. The first year, you almost never do the things that the SA20 did because, perfect, time zone.
Yeah.
The weather is amazing, and like the people came out. All the stadiums were fully packed.
I've actually always wanted to know.
Was good.
I've always wanted to know the players' reaction when it first came about. SA 20. Was there skepticism or was there positivity?
Yeah. Well, it was more because of that global thing that got cancelled. So it was like, oh yeah, we go again.
Yeah.
But I think like in theory, everyone knew that like, listen, if this thing kicks off, like it's gonna be. Listen, we were some of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
And also having all of our national players available.
Yeah, that's a key.
I think like that's where like the
that's a differentiator.
Big bashes kind of died down a little bit. Like in the early years, they had all of their like stars playing.
Mm.
Listen, it's obviously great because some of the lesser known players get more opportunities. But at the end of the day, if I'm tuning in to watch whoever, say Sydney Sixers playing, I want to see Smith, Stark, Hazelwood. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that's where SA20 is similar to like IPL, where all the international guys play. Yeah. And
I think for, you know, you were obviously one of the senior guys when SA20 started, but you had some youngsters in that side. I mean, their eyes must have, in that change room, they must have been like, wow, okay, this is what it's about. Instead of playing in front of two cousins and,
I think, listen, at the end of the day, it's all about developing Proteas.
Yeah.
I think that's always going to be the end goal. Yes, people are making money and all of that sort of stuff. People are playing, getting opportunities. And I think the kind of spin-off is that now you see a lot of those guys who were unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're playing county cricket.
Yeah.
They're playing in the PSL.
Yeah.
They're getting drafted into the IPL.
Yeah.
So, you know, whereas previously you had to maybe play a few games for the Proteas to get recognized there.
I mean, Jordan Herman's playing for Somerset now. There is, in my opinion, there's no ways he would have been playing county cricket if he hadn't played SA20 and people didn't know about it.
So I think like that, I mean, it's Jordan Herman, Ethan Bosch is at Middlesex.
Fantastic.
Was this Forrester guy? He went to Kent.
Yeah.
You know, so like it's great to see the youngsters, and it also puts South African cricket on the map. Yeah. And that exposure to play in different leagues from such a young age, it's only going to benefit. I mean, I was lucky enough to play county cricket when I was 18. I think I just started playing for South Africa.
Yeah.
Obviously, the rules back then were a bit different with Coldpack. Yeah. And then also, you had to have played at least one test and I think 10 or 15 white ball games in a certain period to like qualify for their like visa. And
the famous Holders for Leon played one test against
England. I'm off. But that experience there, listen, when I played for Kent, it was Rob Key, Martin van Nasveld, Justin Kim, Ryan McLaren, Joe Denley.
Sure.
Like these are all guys who play international cricket. Darren Stevens, you know what I'm saying? So that experience in that first year as an 18, 19-year-old kid, interacting with these guys. And yes, it's about play. And Graham Ford was coach as well. So yes, playing whatever, like bad ball field, but sitting there, just listening to the stories, like unbelievable.
You know, when you say about like 18 years old and stuff, it actually... It does feel like you have had such a long career that you've grown up in the public eye.
Yeah.
And like, just take us through those early years of cricket. I mean, if you can think back to them, they, you know, where everything was just easy and it was just fun. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here's your flat white.
Awesome.
Do you take sugar?
No sugar.
As is, you're an athlete.
Straight in.
Just take us through that time, because I feel that you've grown up in the public eye, whether that was by choice or not. You didn't really have the choice to grow up in the public eye, but it must have been tough, even though you had the skill, but growing up at that time and playing at such a young age in international cricket.
Yeah, listen, I mean, where I come from, right, so like we just played sport. It was no, there was no like, we're playing sport so that we can get into that team, and then from that team we're going to this team. Like, we just played, like in the summer, like we'd play cricket. In the winter it was either rugby, soccer, or like even when like Wimbledon is on, then we'd carve out bats and just hit in the street. Like,
Yeah.
That's how we like played, right? And then I was fortunate enough to go to Grey High School in BE. And I think from there, then it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, cricket is actually structured. Mm. Like, you know, you train during the week and you play on the weekend.
Yeah.
And as a hostel boy, oh, it was like amazing. I could literally go to the nets every single day. I could get someone to come throw balls at me, and it was just amazing. Then I play SA under 19 when I'm 16. So I go to Coke Week in East London 2005. And then, listen, I'm 16 years old, like, just want to play, do well, get picked for SA schools. And then, I'm not sure if it's the same now, but the SA schools team used to play against the provincial team in that city. Yeah. So obviously we had to play against Border Bears.
They play the Colts team now.
Yeah. It was the amateur team, which was like a strong team. So you have like four or five franchise players.
Mm.
And then obviously the rest of the guys are like fringe players, right? So at the time, didn't know, like, I'm like, what pick for SA schools? Like, crazy.
Yeah.
Play the game. And I found this out afterwards. It was basically between myself and there's another left arm seamer. I think his name was Charles Peterson, right? To go to the World Cup in Jan 2006 in Sri Lanka. 19
World Cup. Yeah.
And I outbowled him by a couple of runs.
Hmm.
And then I got picked. So literally, like, I think we batted first, then we bowled second. I can't remember the scorecard, but let's say he bowled 10 overs for 40 runs. I bowled 10 overs for 37.
Jeez.
And I got picked. And as we're walking off the field at Buffalo Park, look to the scoreboard and all the names start popping up.
No.
The World Cup squad.
And
what happened was, I think the whole year before that, they had a list of 35 guys.
Mm.
So obviously each guy was numbered, right? And because I wasn't on the list, I was number 36. And that's how I actually got my first number, jersey number.
Yeah.
And I later found out that my mom was 36 years old when she gave birth to me as well.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was like, weird.
That's
so cool. As I'm walking off, like, cool, see all these guys, like, oh, nice. Like, I know this guy, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, the last name is me.
Mm.
And I'm like, and there was a like spelling error as well. So it was Parnell with an E at the end. So I was like, what's going on here? Anyway, like, get off the field. Everyone's like, well done. Like, congratulations. This. And again, like, you don't know what's going on.
Mm.
Get to the World Cup, 2006.
Did you even have a passport at the time?
No. So I obviously get a passport. Yeah. And then, went to that World Cup, played there, came back. And then, was kind of earmarked then to play the next World Cup. Because obviously then I'm 18.
Yeah, you played two of those, yeah.
Yeah, so then that's 2008 in Malaysia. And then play the World Cup and then kind of come back from that. Again, like, not really thinking anything, but I came back and then I played the T20 games for the Warriors. Mm. So that was like the last comp. I think it was still called the Standard Bank Pro 20. With the bucket hats and all that. Yeah.
The hard hats. Yeah.
So played that, I think it was like only one round. So played all of those games. Then from there, went to the National Academy at HBC. Spent 8 weeks there, hating life, doing fitness and sitting in lectures, not picking up a bat or a ball. Then I went to Australia with the emerging team.
Sure.
So we used to have like a South Africa, Institute of Sport, Australia, India A, and New Zealand A.
Wow.
Played in that comp there in Brisbane. Great experience. Kepler Vessels was the coach,
sure,
along with Shafiq Abrams. And that was kind of the first, because listen, I had Russell Domingo at
Warriors,
right? And like, great guy still to this day. I think he's one of the best coaches I ever played under because he just got me.
Mm.
And I also worked with Pete Porter. So when I was in grade 11, I played for the EP men's team.
Okay.
And Pete was there again. What a human being. And then obviously now seeing this different side now where these guys didn't know me, right? So Kepler Vessel, Shafiq Abrams, and seeing how professional coaches work. And I was like, okay,
Kepler must have driven that.
Kepler is a hard guy. Came back from that, back to the National Academy, then started... What happened was emerging tour, I got injured, tore my intercostal. So I went back to the academy doing rehab and physio for the next 4 to 6 weeks. And then the boys started playing against Bangladesh back in. And I was just sitting there getting physio. Start the season with the Warriors in October. First class season. Play that. I think we played like maybe 4 or 5 rounds. Then I got invited to a... I don't know if it was a camp or if I just got invited to train with the Proteas. So they had a thing in Kimberley. So now this is the first time now I'm interacting with the big dogs, right? So in the A team, there were a couple of fringe guys, but like now I get to Kimberley, like big dogs are there. Yeah. So Smiths, your Callises, Bouchers, Staines, Morkels, all of these guys, right? So 3 days of that. I think the guys who got, it was myself and I think Dean Alger, who obviously hadn't played at the time, like we were there. And there might have been one or two other guys, but yeah, train with them. Like obviously for me, like these are my heroes, right? Yeah.
Was that the point in your career, in your life really, where you realized cricket is obviously fun,
yeah,
but it's also professional? Like was there that moment?
No.
You still were just...
And at that particular point in time, I was a professional for, what, about 6-7 months already. Yeah. I was being paid to play cricket. But again, it was like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Because it's nice to wake up at... Like my dad used to wake me up at 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
to watch these guys play against Australia, you know?
The best of the
Caribbean as well.
Except for Matthew Hayden and Justin Langer were batting. So, and he woke up and they were 400
to 2. You know what I'm saying? Like these, and like in the yard as well, these were the battles that I used to have with my dad where South Africa was versus Oz. Like, but then, yeah, leave that camp, obviously, like, nice experience. Get back to PE, like, play for the Warriors. And I'll never forget this. I think it was a Saturday morning on my way to... No, went to the gym. On my way back home, I get a call from this random, I think it was like plus, what's the Oz code? Is it +64 or something like that?
Yeah.
This number, I'm like, what's going on there? So stop. Then I was driving past Gray actually. Stop on the side, answer the call. It's Mike Proctor.
The traffic police aren't watching. You can say you carried on driving
so
without.
PE that time. And I was like, I just got my like license, so I wasn't comfortable driving on the phone. Mike Proctor is like,
oh wow,
hey, you've been selected to play for the Proteas in Australia. I was like, what? I thought like, this is a prank call or what's going on? It's like okay. Yeah. It's like, cool, someone is gonna email you and send you all the like details.
Sure.
Well done. I'm like, thanks. Bye. And I sat there for like 10 minutes like not knowing what's going on. Yeah. Right. Phone my like parents. I'm like, listen, this has happened. I'm like, they obviously happy. Like, I just, again, my mind's like, right, I'm gonna play cricket, but now I'm going back to Oz, where I played previously with the emerging team, and it's gonna be cool. And then I get on the flight, and like, I'm sitting next to Urshel Gibbs and like Johan Boerter. So all the like white ball guys went. So Urshel Gibbs, Johan Boerter, and I think it was Albie Morkel. So it's, and again, it's like, these are my like, Johan is, I was lucky because I obviously played with him, But then, like, Albie and Urshel, like, you know, again.
Legends.
Get to Oz. And I got there when, you know, the famous last day of Sydney when Graham went out. So, like, you'll see a young boy in the background there where Graham was walking out. Yeah, I'm the guy, like, in the background there. That's cool. Obviously witnessing that, like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, no, this is proper stuff. But then still, like, you don't think anything, right? So now... The test boys leave, the white ball stuff starts. We go to Melbourne, first T20. That's when David Warner comes in. And I played against David Warner in 2006 World Cup. Obviously, a new decent player. And he's whacking Steyn, Morkel, Mackay, and T. Like, I'm like, these are the main guys.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm laying on the side of the MCG seeing this. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I cannot play here. This level is beyond me.
Yeah.
Right? And then we go to Brisbane and I play that game. So debut again, like Gabba, massive stadium, like playing against the Aussies. And then go into the ODI series. And then I knew like, listen, I'm not going to play. I thought, listen, I might not play the whole thing. But as it ended up, we beat them like 3-0. straight first three games, so series one in Adelaide, I think Hashim got 100 and I think AB got 100 as well. And then big fines meeting afterwards, and like on the way to the bus, like Mickey Arthur comes and he puts his arm around and he's like, "Hey, I love you, buddy." And he's like, "Hi, coach. I love you too." And it's like, "Listen, the last ODI, you're playing."
Wow.
So now it's like, we've got probably at least a week because we go to Hobart first and then we go to Perth. So I have like a whole week to like prep, and which was, I don't know if it was good or not.
Yeah, I was just going to say, maybe you want to hear on the morning.
Hey, you in, you know? So like went to Hobart, prep there thinking like, right. And then played Wacker again, like, you know, like really cool venues that I make all my like debuts. Test debut at Wanderers later on. But such a cool experience. And then like, again, I leave there not even thinking anything like, listen, I'm a professional. Because also, I didn't really feel part of the team yet.
Who was like the captain of that white ball side of the when you made it?
So obviously Buff was supposed to be, but then Buff broke his hand. And then Johan Boerter ended up captaining the white ball series. But I didn't feel, and maybe it was my own insecurity. I didn't feel part of the team, and I don't feel like they felt like I was part of the team. Because listen, I'm a 19-year-old kid. I've played like a handful of first class games, a handful of white ball games. Did well at the under 19 World Cup, but that's under 19 cricket. Now you're with the big boys, you know. And then fast forward a couple of weeks, we play Australia and the first ODI at Centurion, I'm in, and I get a 4 for 20. But like myself and Dale, like that first 10 overs, we like clean up the Aussies. And then after that, it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like you can actually do it, you know.
You've like proven yourself.
I know it was only one game, but then that's like a cool. And then that whole series was like, with a more senior players, a lot better, and I felt a lot more at ease, and actually felt like, listen, I can actually play at this level. Then England come here as well, and then I make my test debut at the Wanderers. Again, like test cricket, I've always had like a weird relationship with it. I never felt like I was like, listen, you as a kid you want to play test cricket, but I never felt like I want to play like 50 test matches or play 100 test matches. I always enjoy white ball cricket more. I don't know if it's because it's how we kind of played the game, but more excitement, but more maverick style of like playing, whereas like obviously cricket, this test cricket is more like it's played over 5 days, the ebb and flow of it. I always found like white ball cricket a bit more exciting compared to red ball cricket.
Do you feel that you learned your game live rather than having to grind it out in, you learned your game in front of millions of people rather than in the quiet areas of domestic cricket?
Yeah, so I think also like, obviously now in hindsight, you can look back and you can analyze your career. And I think, listen, who's right and who's wrong, right? But I feel like I should have been left to, because what happened in, so I played 2009. I have that like great 12 months. I burst onto the scene, do well. T20 World Cup in England as well, like do well there. And then I go to the IPL and I get injured. Yeah. So I tear tendons in my groin. I had to go for surgery, right? So like first time surgery, and again, I think I was 20 at that particular time. I turned 21 when I was actually injured. And then I came back from that, and then I got picked to play against Zimbabwe. So they toured here, but they should have probably not have picked me. Should have probably been like, a cool, go play for the Warriors, kind of get back into playing. And then I think like, I came back and I could feel like I wasn't ready. But again, I didn't know any better because I just thought like, oh, I'll just pick it up again and I'll just come and play. But it doesn't work like that, right? And because you're young, you don't know any better. You don't have any reference points.
You feel like you're invincible.
And then I had a period of a few years where I didn't really enjoy cricket. And I was playing international cricket, but I didn't really want to play. And it's weird to say because I was so young, right? And I felt like I was going on tours and I was playing one game here and one game there. And, you know, but because the thing is, I was always the next guy in. So I had to go, which I understand now as well. But it was doing me a disservice because I was so young. If I was 28, 29, and I'd played 50, 60 first class games and another 70, 80 white ball games, it's different because I kind of know my game.
Mm.
So when I'm on tour, I know what to do.
Mm.
So I'd be on tour, I'd go train, and then that's it. You know, there's like nothing else to it. And most of my learning was done playing. You know, the nets and that, yes, you can learn. But when you're young, you need to play. And I think it's the same thing now with my son. He wants to practice all that. I said, listen.
Does he play cricket?
He plays cricket. He plays soccer. And I always say to him, like, whenever there's matches, go and play. Because that's where you're going to learn. Listen, we can go practice and we can whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you're only going to learn so much. But when you're under pressure, you got to figure things out in real time. And like you're saying, I had to figure out my career at international level, which is difficult. And that's why I went through a period where I wasn't really enjoying it. I was playing, but then I wasn't really enjoying it. And I actually have this conversation with some of my like close people, and I say I've had three careers within one.
Yeah.
So the first one was like that little 2 year period where I first on the scene, like did super well, felt invincible. And then I had three or 4 years or 5 years where I was playing, but I wasn't really enjoying it.
Wilderness,
like, didn't not want to be there. And then I went cold pack, and then the last bit coming back and playing international cricket where I really loved it again. And then realized like, oh, like this is actually what it feels like to play international cricket, the pride of playing for your family and 60 million people. But I suppose I was also a bit older, so I could take in other things. And I think other things that were more important than cricket took place in my life, the birth of my kids. So that also puts things into perspective. And I think it's cool, but life, there's more to life.
I can argue that there was a fourth stage of your career, and that was when you were captaining the Cobras. And that I felt like was a stage of your career, which I think I was there. So I could see it actually, and I could see the enjoyment that you, it was the first time that I followed your career, your whole career. And first time I actually saw you really enjoying yourself, especially in domestic cricket. It takes a lot for a local cricketer to motivate themselves. But to play like that, how you played and lead that team, it was almost like the captaincy was like something that you had, like, you just thrived on. I feel like that stage of,
so it
was the perfect time for that.
Yeah, it's actually funny because if I had to pinpoint something, it would be Colpack, which actually triggered all of that.
Yeah.
So when I went to Worcester, so Moeen Ali played a big role in that. He was like, listen, come to Worcester, like, you're going to love it here. And I went there, and listen, it's probably the best couple of years that I had on and off the field. Like,
won the Blast.
Lost in the final the next year. Such a great bunch of guys. And then I think I kind of realized there, like, this is what it should be like playing. Because listen, cricket's hard. Like, you have so many bad days, but like, I was having so much fun. And on top of that, I was indirectly mentoring a few boys who are now kicked on to play international cricket.
Nice.
Which I didn't even know I was doing. And my wife Aisha actually pointed it out to me. She's like, listen, you've done this and done this and that. And the only other captaincy that I had done before that was under 19 World Cup. And I did one game for the Warriors when I was very young still as well. Someone got injured and I had to captain the game. And then I went through almost like 10, 12 years of not captaining. But I'd always seen myself as a captain on the field. So whenever I'm standing on the field and the captain makes a decision, I'm always thinking like, that's a good decision, or like, I would probably have gone with this. So when the captaincy fell into my lap, it wasn't like, oh, how am I going to do this thing? It was just a natural thing for me.
You were ready.
And I think maybe like you're saying, that's what you saw. And I think a lot of people don't see this about me is that I'm in the background. I'm still talking to guys. I'm helping guys one-on-one. I've never been a guy who would shout and scream like, hey, come on, let's do this. Or, hey, you got to do this. I've never been that guy. And some people are like that. And that's also fine. And I think it's counted against me at certain times because I'm not as vocal as people maybe want me to be. I prefer to come to you one-on-one because I feel also like if I can have a go at you one-on-one and yes, you're going to not feel good about it, but you're going to take it better. If I have a go at you in a group, amongst your peers.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Sam saying only some people can like handle that. And I learned that from a young age because I had Ray Jennings as my under 19 coach. And listen.
He can spray you.
Yeah. And for some of us, it worked. Right. For me, like him doing that was the best thing. If I had a different coach at under 19 level, oh, my career would have probably been different, you know, because I could handle that, because where I grew up, that's how we dealt with like anything, right? Yeah. It's like you do something bad, right? Boom, boom, boom. Cool. So captaincy, it's something I really enjoy because I can impact the game, but also like I can help individuals because I might see something in them that they don't even see in them, in themselves. Yeah. You know? So like, look at Ethan Bosch, for instance.
Pretoria Capital, right?
So he got picked, and I'm sure if you ask him, he was probably thinking like, right, I'm not going to play yet. Because we had a few other guys who were ahead, right? I saw him train for about 5-6 days, started talking to him. It's the first time I've interacted with him. Started talking to him, asked him some tough questions about his game and what makes him tick and what does he like doing and, you know, what are his weaknesses? Because that's also part of the learning, right? And I need to know what your weakness is, because I'm not going to, a good captain won't throw you into a period of the game where the numbers say, listen, Brookie's not going to succeed in this, right? But when you're good at that, so this is how I like to captain. If I know that you're good in that phase, I'm going to use you in that phase, because I know over a period of games, you're going to do well.
Yeah.
So with Boshi, I watched him bowl, I watched him operate, and I was like, he bowls really well with a new ball. And in Pretoria, people are like, listen, the ball flies, but yes, high scoring ground, but there's a lot of swing there, you know, when the conditions are right. And he's got good control, he can swing the ball both ways. And then I just kind of tapped into that, and he had a great season.
He was the emerging player.
He was the best player, exactly. And no, I'm telling you now, if you took 1,000 people, no one would have mentioned him.
No.
But at the end of the day, I think that's where the like captaincy thing for me really brings out a different side in me, because I'll take a chance on anyone that I think can do well. Like that season, where Junaid Dawood was our flipping star.
Yeah.
And again, no one would have been like, he wasn't even in the plans to be there, you know, but you just have a gut.
He was playing for you.
And the experience that you've built up over time, and you're like, I just have a feeling. Listen, we're in PE in the bubble. We're playing all the games there. I grew up there. I know it's going to spin at some stage. It's going to be slow. It's going to be low.
Yeah.
We need something like this. And then getting Richard Levy back and getting Dane Villas.
Yeah.
Again, I played with these guys. I know what characters they are. And I know that Richard's going to win me one game somewhere, because he's the bulldog.
Yeah.
He's going to come in. He's going to flip and
dominate
guys. And then Dane is going to do his thing. And also, I needed like one or two extra guys to, because listen, we had a mixed group of young guys so I needed one or two guys to, when I'm not there, to also have eyes on them. Understand? So you gotta, I think that's where like leadership also comes into it, is that you have to put the right people in the right spots.
Yeah.
And then that makes your job easier. You know, instead of you trying to manage everything, you can't.
It's impossible to
have eyes everywhere.
I was looking at your crick info.
And a lot of teams. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
I think it's a great thing, because you are the epitome of the modern day cricketer, where you've played literally every single league around the world. And my question to you is not which one's the best, more which league surprised you the most in a good way. Or maybe in a bad way as well, that you thought you had expectations, but which league actually surprised you the most?
So SA20, definitely.
Okay.
First season, did not think it was going to go that well. I knew that, listen, in time, it's going to be one of the best leagues. But from the first season, boom, it was like, just went nuts. And then every season since has been better and better. But the IPL, I mean, we can't go past the IPL. It's the sort of pinnacle when it comes to league cricket. Every player wants to play in it. Besides the glitz and glamour off the field, the cricket on the field. And, you know, there's arguments. Is it now too long? Do we shorten it? How do we, you know, this, you're always going to have these debates and these chats. And then there'll be talks of like making it a proper like league, so like a Premier League football more teams and have 15, 20 teams and you play. Is that too much? Is it not? There's always going to be that. But I think, IPL definitely has to be the best league. And then they are SA20. And I'm not just saying that because I'm South African. No. Honestly, it's like, and every league is different, right? Yeah. So CPL, the most fun.
Yeah.
Just Caribbean, like the people vibes. Are so chilled. Like it's just vibes everywhere. I remember actually we had an off day and, we went around Barbados. We had played against someone the night before. And I'm thinking like, listen, I'm like in the middle of Barbados there, like in the hills and you know, selling these, fruit juices and stuff, all fresh and whatever. So like, and this guy's saying like, listen, you bowled so well last night, da, 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 da. And he's telling me, oh, but you know, you're third over that ball there. You should. It's like, and they know cricket, they very knowledgeable, like the average person, like really, really cool. But yeah, every league is very different. And then you go to the UK. It's also, I love the UK and blast cricket. Oh, very tough.
That's very cool. Very tough. I like the blast. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. A great comp. And like, obviously now it's mixed. So previously it used to be South Group, North Group.
Yeah.
But yeah, all very, very different. And like how they support cricket as well. Like, you
love that. It's so good. Yeah.
And like, it's a
traditional.
It's traditional, but it's a very like, oh, I don't know if it's just, I mean, yeah, most of the clubs have been the same.
Yeah.
Very like family.
Yeah.
So all your members will be, every time you come, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. They used to bring me biscuits.
Yeah.
I used to love that. There used to be one lady there.
Yeah.
She used to bring biscuits.
That's the way to go.
I'll be like, listen, you can bring these biscuits.
You can be a superstar, but you can also just be a normal guy as well.
Just great.
That's great. The one thing that, and I think you are perfect for it, is that you are you're a world traveler. You have an interest in culture. You have an interest in photography and in fashion. Like your mind must be, if you could tell the younger Wayne Parnell that you'd be going to all these countries around the world, like, what would you have said to your younger self when?
You're nuts. You're nuts. Listen, like I said, where I grew up, like, I think just getting out of the city would have been a good thing, right? But to be able to, I was laughing the other day. Like, firstly, why would I go to Belgium? And I'm going to Belgium to play cricket.
Yeah.
I'm not even going on holiday. I'm going to play cricket. Like, it's nuts. I've been to Canada. I've been all the way down to New Zealand.
Mm.
I've played in Hong Kong, the Hong Kong Sixers. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's so cool to experience this. And I think, listen, cricket's going to stay the same, right? Bat versus ball. But interacting with people from different walks of life, different cultures, different backgrounds, ages, it's amazing. Even now in this Belgium thing as well, like, there's some boys who were born in Afghanistan who obviously moved, they play for the national team.
Mm.
And just to like spend time with them and listen to their story is such a like cool thing. And I think those are the things that I'm going to miss when I stop playing, because those things are worth more, like the weight in gold, in diamonds, platinum, whatever.
There's this kind of new masters kind of, you know, next level before you actually have to, not many players retire anymore. But, you know, you retire from international cricket, which technically speaking, you haven't done, if I'm not mistaken. So there is still a chance.
But Shooks, you're watching this.
You're available for the 27 World Cup. But I mean, just playing in the, you're still fit. You're still young, you know, you don't have to call it quits these days.
Yeah.
For the next 5-6 years, maybe. Like, what does that look like? You played, obviously, the Masters one, the South African one last year that we won. How was that? I mean, being one of the fittest guys on the side and the youngest ones on the side.
It was fun. It was fun. Firstly, because, listen, we got all of these guys that we played for the Proteas with.
Mm.
Together, and then there were a few of us younger pups, so myself, Hardis, Viljoen, Duane Olivier, SJ Ervier, JJ Smuts,
the guys with working hands
were like like younger guys. And then, like, I mean, Pangy had played his like last season as well. And then to get like your legends, it was such a cool experience. But again, like, you you watch season one and there's a lot of older guys, and I think maybe that was quite deceiving as well because the quality of the cricket wasn't that good.
Yeah.
Then you get to this and you look at the teams and you're like, oh, he plays. And you look at the next team,
he plays.
I mean, even like Pakistan's team, they had like six or seven guys who are still currently playing PSL cricket.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was strong. Aussies as well. But it was so fun. It was so fun. And obviously winning it makes it much better. But it was also cool because it started off kind of slowly.
Yeah.
But then also, like, the first game was great because that bowl out, I think that just set the tone for, like, the whole
court. I remember watching that game.
After that, madness. I had so many people texting me, and I didn't know how many people were actually, like, watching it. And then from there, they were watching, and now there's actually pressure and stuff. So it became, like, playing proper cricket again.
Yeah.
And then to obviously win it, great.
And then, I mean, just in the next... Are you looking to go into coaching at all? Because I mean, if you like, I love the fact that you love captaining, but I actually think that you would make a really good coach, whether it's a bowling consultant or to start off with. Is that in your thinking?
I just want to say something, guys. Please subscribe, like, share, because I'm getting all my flowers here, right? Listen, if you had asked me about 5 years ago, I would have said absolutely not.
Yeah,
because I wanted to get away from cricket.
Mm.
But like I said, I've actually realized that I've been helping so many people and I actually enjoy it. Mm. And it's nice to see people just become better, you know? And it's not just on the field as well, it's off the field as well. If I can help them off the field, listen, I've made so many mistakes myself. Like you said, I've gone through my young adult life in the public eye and I've had to navigate certain things. Mm. So... you know, then the coaching thing, like, okay, cool, it's actually something. But again, I think I'll have to do it for maybe whether it's 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years and see if I actually like it, because doing bits here and there or mentoring people one-on-one is nice, but can I do it every single day? So I think that's the like challenge, and I think that's what I have to figure out.
I think you'll be great at it. Firstly, I want to talk a little bit on the personal life, if you wouldn't mind. Happy anniversary.
Thanks.
This year. And going back to a young Wayne Parnell, if I said to you when you were making your debut then that you would, in 2026, you'd be married for 10 years with 3 kids.
No chance.
Beautiful family. Luck. What would you have said to yourself then?
No chance. I was actually telling Aisha this the other day. I said to her, you know, my like plan was at 30, I'll start looking for a wife. Maybe 35, get married. Then have kids and stuff like that. But in actual fact, I almost feel like I should have had kids younger because then they would have had an experience of me playing international cricket for longer.
Yeah.
You know, what was nice was my son was just born when I was called back.
Mm.
So like he got that, he's still very young. He obviously doesn't remember anything, but like he used to run around the dressing rooms and all that sort of stuff. And it's so cool to see that because I used to have that with my niece when I was here at province. When I just moved, she was still very young, and I used to love having her after games, just coming, picking up my bat, throwing my ball, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, like, listen, life unfolds as it should. Mm. And like I said, if it's something I would maybe change, it was having kids younger. But at the end of the day, like, I'm really happy. I'm really satisfied with the way that things have, you know, panned out.
I remember once I was with you and Aisha. I think I bumped into you guys at one time and you got introduced. And Aisha's obviously a content creator, influencer, and very well known. And you got introduced as Aisha's husband. And and now obviously I know you from cricket, and like they had zero clue that you had played international cricket for 10 years and all that. But that's just the nature of the game. I mean, like, but people know you as, you know, as a fashion guy as well, and very much culturally in touch with that side of your lifestyle.
Yeah. And listen, it's, I think my ego is small enough to be okay with that. When I go into her space, it's her cricket field to shine and play, and you know, and when I'm in my space, she does exactly the same. So I think having that is obviously really good. And then, like, you know, now with social media as well, like I have people coming up to me telling me that I'm a cool TikToker. They don't even know that I play cricket. You understand? So, like, even from that perspective as well, you gotta keep changing and keep evolving. And I think that's what I like now. And I listen, I don't want to big myself up, but I feel like when I started my career, I maybe started in the wrong era because I'm very 2026.
Yeah.
But back then it was you couldn't, you know, your hobbies had to be like golf and me taking photos. Like that was a big thing. Weird. Like, like when I left, that was like one of the reasons why I ended up leaving as well. Like myself and Ashwell, who was obviously coach, Ashwell Prince, we had a big falling out because like my off-field activities didn't align with like what the, you know, there. And when I played Colpac a couple of years, and when I came back, like it bothered me for like 3 years where it didn't make sense to me, right? So I reached out to him when I got back. I think it was still COVID. I reached out to him and we had a nice conversation. And listen, he was man enough to admit that he made some mistakes. And I love Ashwell. I have nothing against him. But at that time, obviously, you know, that's the way. And he comes from an old school. And I started in an old school. I know what that old school is like, right? But now the world is very different. And I think he's also understood that. And I'm sure now, even in his coaching style, it's very different from how he was 10 years ago. And I think that's the beauty, the growth, you know what I'm saying? So I love a lot of different things. And I think it's okay to also love a lot of different things. And I always tell young guys now, just be who you are. If you like music, if you like poetry, if you like painting, just do it.
Don't need that balance.
Yeah, but don't get sucked into this thing of like, oh, I can't do this because like this person's gonna, or they're gonna say this. Like, I think at the end of the day, and my dad, when he was alive, he used to say this to me. He's like, whenever you're in a space, half the people like you, half the people don't. And whatever you do, half the people like you. So I always have that in the back of my mind. And I encourage my son as well. I say to him, like, play an instrument. He's like, oh, no, but it's not cool. I'm like, how do you know? I think it's so cool.
Yeah.
I can't play an instrument. I'm like, if you can play the guitar, the piano, I'm like, that is so cool. Like, you can kick a ball, you can hit a ball, like, cool. But, like, do other things. Go paint, go draw, like, you know? But I think that like growth factor away from the actual sport, because that's you're gonna be doing that for the rest of your life. Cricket, I can't be playing cricket when I'm 50.
Yeah, you never know.
I mean, maybe in the fifth team with my son, yes, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I can see you coaching that side from the sidelines. Let's
see what I'm doing. But I think like having hobbies away from like cricket, taking your mind off it, very very important.
Love it. I mean, how important has you obviously you went through your conversion in, was it 2011 or somewhere 2011-12, somewhere around there. How that was obviously before you met Aisha.
Yeah.
You know, just take me through I've always wanted to ask you, and we've never sat one-on-one to ask you this, but take me through the mindset at the time, and what was going on in your life at that time that took you to make that decision at the time.
So I think it probably coincided with that period where I wasn't really enjoying what I was doing. So I was, if you want to say it, I was a little bit lost, right? And I'd explored a few different religions and this really spoke to me. And again, like I'm very open-minded, but I'm also like, if I see something and I like it now, it doesn't mean I'm going to like it forever. So I go and I research and I kind of let that snowball a little bit. And then I was like, no, like, I don't just like it. Like, I love this. And like, I think this is the way I should be living my life. And this is how I should be interacting with people every day. And, you know, and I think then from there, it's like, okay, cool. Like, but I need to get the blessings of my parents. And I think that's very important as well. And my mom is to this day still Christian and very Christian. And like, they were fine with it, and I was like, nice. Cool, like that shows me that like
they shock you when they
yes that they were so fine with it so quickly.
Yeah,
you know, normally it's like, oh, and then like maybe a few months down the line they're like, oh, okay, cool, like, you know. But my dad straight away was like, if that's gonna make you happy, then do it.
Mm.
And you know, like, I miss my dad now. I don't want to get emotional or anything like that, but just to be able to ask him those sort of questions, you know, because he's always been one that he just gives me like straight advice.
Mm.
And I think like just being able to pick up the phone and be like, listen, I'm struggling with this. Like, should I go on the David Brooks podcast? What do you think? Be like, well, you know, these are the pros, these are the cons.
But, yeah, there's no cons.
You know, so like just having that, I think, blessing, I guess. And then, yeah, from there, then just kind of went into it. And then I met Aisha, obviously, afterward. But to this day, a lot of people are like, oh, like, you met Aisha and then this. And it's like, no, like, I was already a Muslim before. But I also kept it semi-private, you know, because again, it's my relationship.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be in the public. Like, my religion doesn't have anything to do with anyone else. It's my relationship with God, you know. So that's also nice. And the other thing was also like Hashimamla. Oh, Hashimamla is speaking to everyone wants everyone to, it's like, no.
Yeah.
If anything, I remember like
that at the time,
Hashimamla will never put pressure on anyone. Never, and he's like the opposite, you know what I'm saying? Like, again, like just a funny guy, like just one of the boys, like people see him as this like serious guy, like he's not. But I think religions also played a very important part with regards to there's more to life than just cricket.
Yeah.
And then I think like when all these kind of factors play a part in who you are, you can't enjoy this thing that's a lot of pressure.
Mm.
And then I think probably the last, I'd say 10 years or so, like, I've like really enjoyed cricket. Mm. Like, again, like I've really, like my first, so you say like what, first 2 or 3 years, like loved it. Then 4 or 5 years, like not enjoying it. Mm. And then like the last 10 years, like really loving it again.
I always felt like people were going to judge Wayne Parnell no matter what. You know, you were kind of like, You were always going to get criticized. Some people loved you. Some people criticized you. Some people hated you. A lot of
people criticized me.
But it takes a very strong character to still make decisions knowing that you are going to be criticized. Guys like AB, maybe both of those kind of guys weren't as scrutinized as much as you were. And I really think that you deserve credit for that because to be steadfast in your beliefs and in your decisions took a lot, and I think that's something that you could probably pass on to your kids. I mean, when you look at your kids now and you're going like, okay,
yeah. No, I think it's, listen, again, now in hindsight, there were times where I should have played more for the Proteas, definitely, but I also think there were times where I probably shouldn't have played when I was playing, you know. Again, what's right and what's not right. So the criticism comes with it. How do you deal with it? So like I said, that period where I wasn't enjoying cricket, and now it's like all these random people are like abusing me, and I'm just trying to do something that I enjoyed previously, but now it's like this is causing that. So I'm like, well, do I stop this? But it's like, but I there's like a bit of me that still likes it because you know, it's something that you're so used to doing, and you get to travel and all of that sort of stuff, and then you gotta like figure out like, okay, cool, so I either stop this or I try and stop that. How do I stop that? I stop reading the papers, articles about myself, because naturally like when you do well, you're like, hey, I'm gonna see what people are saying. But then you gotta be like, right, when you have a bad game, you gotta go, you know. So I stopped it. And then what I then started doing was, so when I went over to the UK Cold Pack, I really started analyzing my performance. And I moved away from the numbers.
Nice.
And then I moved into the impact that I was making. So for instance, if I'm playing in a T20 game, I bowl 3 overs for 60, right? Just making up something crazy. But then the last over, my last over goes for 5 runs and I win the game.
Yeah.
Listen.
Is that not a success?
The impact, you understand?
100%.
Whereas previously it's like, oh, not for 60, 4 or 5. Terrible game.
Yeah.
Yes, listen, it's not ideal, but I'm winning the game.
You're winning
the game. Because at the end of the day, sport is about winning and losing, right?
Yeah.
yes, a lot of other things that you learn along the way, but at the end of the day, if I'm playing in the final against you, I want to beat you.
And you actually thrived on those clutch moments. Eh? There was something about, yeah, I don't know whether it was the number seven, Ronaldo, and we'll get into that because I want to ask you about that. But somehow that number seven was like empowering, where he's like, give me that damn ball. I want that last over in the blast. And
but that's how I've always been, though. So when I grew up, I used to play. So my brother is 7 years older than me.
Okay.
Right? I used to play with his friends.
Mm.
My friends who were like 1 or 2 years older than me, they were scared to play cricket against those boys, or soccer, or rugby. I used to go play with them, and I used to love it. And then, like, I was, what, 11 or 12, and I was playing men's cricket in PE. It's crazy. Like, now, my son is 8, and I think, like, in, what, 3 years' time, him playing men's cricket, and I was playing Premier League cricket, eh? Not, like, fourth team, or Premier League cricket. It's insane. I cannot think... And I'm going to let my son go play against Claremont Cricket Club. Or against, you understand what I'm saying? It's nuts, right?
Yeah.
But I used to just love it. I always be like, I'm going to show you guys I can do this. And listen, like the blast, the year before that, 2018, we won it. 2019, so finals day, you play semi-finals, finals, same day. The semi-final, we play against Notts. We're losing the game. Last over, they need, I think it was 6 runs. Or, no,
that was the 7 over that runs, I remember,
Ben Duckett's on like 50.
Yeah.
One ball, I think 2 runs to win, right? So I'm at the back of I'm like, right, I'm going to nail the best Yorker I've ever bowled here. And now I'm like, okay, cool, but if the keeper's back, they can still run. And we had a great keeper, Ben Cox. So I go to Moen, I'm like, Moen. I'm like, Mo, do you think Coxie can stand up to the wicket? He's like, what? Why? I'm like, listen, if I bowl a good Yorker, because I want to bowl wide to him. If I bowl a wide Yorker and he misses it, they can still run one. Then it's a tie. And I wasn't sure if it was super over or if it's because they qualified ahead of us in terms of points and then they end up going through.
Yeah.
So I call Coxie. I'm like, Coxie, stand up. He's like, sweet. And I'm like, even if he fumbles it, it's going to land here somewhere and he can pick it up and happen. He was like, missed it, boom, right? So we win the semi-final. So like, amazing.
Yeah.
Then the final against Essex, Simon Harmer.
Yeah.
Last over, same thing as well. Need like almost nothing. And then I end up losing the final. You understand? So so in the same day, I go like from that to that.
Yeah.
Right? So super high and like super, super low. So again... 10 out of 10, give me the last over. Yeah. I want it. Because at the end of the day, like, that's why I play cricket.
Yeah.
I want those moments.
Yeah.
And listen, there's been probably more that I've lost than won, but I always want to be in the pressure moments. When it's high ball, I want to be under the high ball. If last runs to hit, I want to be there. And
love it.
You have to have that, like, mindset. And I tell my son that now. It's been like, when it's tough, be in there because like you can't influence anything sitting on the side, right? So whenever you on the field, like, just go out, be a beast on the field, and then when you're off the field, you can come off and you can chill. Don't come home and say, oh, I should have done it, I should have. I said, no, no, no. I said, when you're there, do it, do all of it, right? So try and also passing that like knowledge to the next gen.
Does Aisha encourage the sporting side of the kids, or is she more on the more chilled side?
I think both of us are aligned with that. I think when we're on the side of the field, like, we encourage and we're competitive. And I was always like, oh, like, I'm just going to stand on the side and just like watch and whatever. But like when they're playing, like, you want them to just do well, you know, but there's no pressure for him to play sport. It's just, he just loves sport. So it's a good thing. I'm not sure if I should maybe change his surname to something else so he can just go through his soul. Because now, like, obviously, like, the surname thing is going to come in. And I think even when he went to school as well, he started noticing, like, oh, like, all the kids are talking to my dad. Like, why are they talking to my dad? Oh, plays cricket, blah, blah, blah. And I don't want that to be the experience that we have. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm your dad. And even when we're, like, playing, I ask him, I'm like, are we training or are we playing?
Yeah.
Because when we're training, I'm your coach.
Yeah.
When we're playing, I'm your dad. We're going to have fun. You know what I'm saying? But when we're training, right, if I tell you do this and do this, you listen.
Yeah.
So, like, whenever we, like, play, I ask him, I'm like, Are we training or are we playing?
Yeah.
And sometimes we train and I'm hard on him.
Yeah.
And then when we're playing, it's just fun. It's just, he can just be who he wants to be.
So that that Ronaldo reference,
yeah, right,
is that purely because of the character and the leader and the kind of clutch moments, loves it.
It goes back actually to Raul, who used to play for Real Madrid.
He also wore number 7, yeah. Now. Okay.
So that was like obviously left foot as well. Like that was one of my first guys. And then I was like, oh, this, and then like David Beckham.
Yeah.
And then like David Beckham, I liked the, yes, gun player, but brand, also like how he was, yeah, off the field. And then Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And then like Ronaldo again, like I like the way he plays.
Mm.
I like his confidence. Arrogance.
Yes. Yeah. You know, that's nothing wrong with that, but the arrogance.
And then like, and then almost every other 7 since then, like, I always noticed the like 7s. And then, yeah, when that number became available, because I had 36, I started with 36. Mm. I had 94 for a little bit as well. That was my ODI cap number. And then 7 became available with the Proteas.
Mm.
Took it, and then everywhere that I go, like 7 is my number.
And you do the Ronaldo celebration, yeah, sometimes as well.
Yeah,
and
yeah. I think now I'm like, it just wastes energy. Yeah. Get a wicket, it's like, yeah.
Where did
I think it's... On the number thing as well, like I think it just makes me feel good. But also, yeah, I've had times where 7's been taken and I've had to choose different numbers. Mm. So I was actually telling my son this
yesterday. Carl Verona got it the one time.
Carl had, yeah, it. Carl was good with it though.
Yeah.
Carl said to me, listen, that's your number, yeah, have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when I left, I said to him, now you can have it, yeah, back. And then I'm not sure if he went back
to 97.
Or we just kept, yeah, 97, yeah. So like even with the like numbers, so I had 15 in the T10, the year we ended up winning it.
Mm.
And I actually told my son this the other, because his birthday's on the 15th of May.
Mm.
And I said, see, like your number means something. You shouldn't just choose like a random number.
Mm.
Because when you're feeling under pressure or whatever, like, you can think of that, and it might motivate you.
I like that, yeah.
And then I had, at North Ants actually, so one of my best friends, Solo Ngweni, who obviously went through the whole...
Is he back on...
He's overseas, now? Actually. He's married and living his best life in Germany, yeah.
Really?
Obviously, that's fantastic. So he was a great...
Yeah.
What, 3 or 4 years younger than me. And again, like, used to mentor him a little bit, played for the Warriors. So I wore, so his number when he was at the Warriors was 45.
Okay.
So that season when I played at North Ends, I wore 45.
So good to hear that he's in good health.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's...
Yeah.
Listen, that amazing guy, I'm telling you, a whole building can fall onto him. He'll get up.
That's unreal. Eh?
That's one guy that I know, like...
Fantastic.
Life can throw anything at him. Yeah. He's just going to...
That was a crazy story, and I'm glad to hear that he's... Yeah. That he's... I wanted to ask you the Orlando Pirates love. Where did that come from? Was that your dad or just like growing up?
So actually, there was a boy at school, in primary school. So he used to always do this.
Yeah.
So like we used to play at like break. We used to play soccer. So yeah, we always used to do this.
You were a gun soccer player.
And
as then well.
I was decent.
Yeah.
And he used to always do. I'm like, what's this thing you always do when you score? He's like, no, it's Pirates. So then like from there, then I started obviously now watching a bit of PSL soccer and then Pirates. I mean, South African soccer in general, like actually everywhere it's the same. It's very like tribal.
Yeah.
You know, so like each little, and when I went to the UK, I actually realized, oh, like this is so cool because like a small village will support that team there and like do or die, like second division, third division, fourth division, like that's my, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas like here you speak to someone, who do you support? Oh, Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal, now Man City, Chelsea. Then there it's like, Aston Villa.
Yeah.
Who do you support? Oh, Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
I support, I was actually born there. Yeah. Oh, okay, cool, you know? So, and then that's also cool. It's that's like us, talking points, because obviously we know about Premier League football, yeah. Mm. And then talking to people there. And then now when I go overseas, like I always take something with Pirates jersey or something South African. So when people see me, it's like, oh.
They recognize them.
It's actually quite a big club around the world. Obviously, Kaizer Chiefs is big as well because of the old...
Lucas and the band.
And the like band and that. But Pirates is pretty big as well.
Amazing.
I was actually in Kenya on my way to the UK during COVID. and the guy who worked there, like, it was early in the morning, like 6 a.m. in the morning, went down, was drinking coffee outside, and the guy came and he saw that he would not leave me alone for the next, I was there for about 7 or 8 days doing quarantine. He would talk to me every single day about football.
That's
cool. So I think sport is such a great tool that can unite people from different walks of life.
Love it. Okay, Pani, we've got a new section as we wrap up called play or leave. Okay. Big decisions. Okay. Short answers, but yeah. Ultimate roommate, Carl Verena or Dwayne Bravo?
Dwayne Bravo, because I probably have the room to myself most of the time. He'd be out and about.
Great answer.
DJ.
Dream player to captain, Brian Lara or Sachin Tendulkar?
Sachin, definitely.
Why?
I think with Brian, I think he was such a big personality. I think it would be difficult to like captain him. Whereas I think with Sachin, even though he had such a massive profile, he still seemed like quite a chilled guy. I mean, even like when I used to speak to him, I was like 19, 20, and he's this icon, right? Like, he was such a nice guy, like you could chat to him and everything. So I think he would be a bit easier to captain. But I think both obviously amazing, amazing
players. Unreal. Right. Ronaldo in Portugal to win the World Cup or a test FIFA at Lords and your name on the board?
Oh, test FIFA, definitely, yeah. even though I'm not, like I said, I don't really love test cricket that much, but Lords again, test cricket at Lords, can't.
No brainer. Your son to be a cricket star or a football star?
Football star, definitely.
You've got a runner when batting and you need one to win. Risk the single or swing for the stands?
It depends who it is.
Firstly, who's your runner that you call?
If it's Kyle Verena, I'll risk the single. If it's George Linder, I'm swinging. George's knees are bugging, so sorry, George.
Yeah, that's okay. I tend to back you on that one, Pony. Listen, Pony, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I didn't want to make it all about cricket, because that you are not defined by cricket. So I really appreciate you opening up today and talking about your family life and just wishing you all the best for what's to come. I'm sure we'll be talking to you one day and you're a bowling coach for one of the IPL sides or something like that. Maybe even batting coach one day. That's the nice thing about being an all-rounder. But listen, thanks very much for coming in on this. We've got a cold, wintry day in Cape Town today. You dressed
for it, yeah.
Dressed for it. Thanks very much for coming
in,
and all the best, man.
Thanks for having me. Cool. Thanks. See you guys.